Hello to you both. Thank you so much for chatting with me. I really appreciate it. Knight Raiders is phenomenal. I genuinely mean that. It was one of my favorite films of the festival this year, and I really appreciate the chance to talk to you both about it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, Dennis, I was wondering, let's start with you. Where did the idea for the project come from? It's such a unique story.
Yeah, I think in all of my work, I talk in some way about the impact of colonization on Indigenous people, and this was no exception. I wanted to talk about the way that colonial policies that came about in the founding of Canada affected all aspects of Indigenous life. And of course, one of the biggest systems that was in place for seven generations of Indigenous families was the residential school system. So I wanted to talk about that impact on families and then do it in this kind of like genre container.
Yeah, the genre container is what really sets it apart. I mean, it's this you're the conversation is incredible, but the structure of it is so unique. I was wondering, what is it about that marriage between Indigenous stories and science fiction that really appealed to you in creating the narrative?
Well, I think genre tropes lend themselves easily to Indigenous experience. And I think there's a lot of genre fans in our communities. Like, our communities have pretty much claimed Baby Yoda as Indigenous. And, if you look at the allegory, like, the Matrix, when I watched that movie, was like, to me, I thought of the Matrix as colonization, or Star Wars. Indigenous people could easily think of themselves as the rebels against the intergalactic empire. So, like a lot of the genre tropes of the underdogs fighting against these oppressive forces of the state is so easily allegories for Indigenous experience.
Yeah, that's it's incredible. It's incredible. And Elamaya, I was wondering about your connection with Niska, because she's such a wonderful character. And I was wondering if you could talk about why you connected so much with her and the transformation that she makes throughout the film.
Sure. Well, Niska represents so many Indigenous women and Indigenous people that I know, who've struggled so much, who have lived through so much adversity and are still able to carry this beautiful strength and capacity for love. And I was very much drawn to her because of her love for her daughter and who she is as a mother. I know so many single mothers who do incredible things every day with so few resources. And she's sort of this reluctant hero. She's someone who doesn't necessarily believe that she has the capacity to overcome everything that's in her path. And she finds the power to do so through love. And I think that that's just such an incredible story. And yeah, I connected with her in so many ways and felt very, in some ways, overwhelmed by the responsibility of doing justice to her story, because again, she represents so many people that I know, and I wanted to do justice to their lived experience. The single mothers in our communities are basically superheroes because of the things that they do every day. And I think that this story is such a beautiful tribute to the strength of our communities and the beauty of family and love and motherhood. And there's something so beautiful about creating this legacy of love through family and motherhood within the genre world.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm glad that you brought up youth, and to you both, youth are it's such an interesting dynamic within this film, because it's almost like the film has two perspectives. Has a perspective of the importance and the focus of youth from the adult's perspective, and then you also have it from the youth's perspective in the facility, seeing these things. I was wondering why you felt that to why Dennis, why you wanted to tell it with that sort of narrative split, and to you both, sort of why youth are so important in this story.
Yeah, I mean, youth were a huge inspiration for me in the telling of the story. I started writing it just after the Idle No More movement swept Canada, and that was a movement that started by four women on the prairies. But the way that the youth stood up and made themselves seen and heard was so beautiful and moving. And I just felt so compelled to tell a story about, you know, the power of Indigenous people, but especially the youth, you know, and how much I just was so struck by their bravery and their fearlessness. And I wanted to reflect that in some way. But also, youth in Indigenous communities carry enormous burdens, and you know, they're under so much pressure, and they're a part of something collective that they did not create, and yet they inherit that burden. And so I really felt compelled to not only talk about the promise of the youth, but also just how it is our responsibility, all of us, to protect them and to empower them and to tell them how much we love them. And so in some ways, the film is like a love letter to the parents that fought so hard for their children and loved them fiercely in spite of like horrific situations, and also the youth and the way that they, you know, still maintain. And the character of Wasi still has an openness and a curiosity in spite of what has happened. And it's such a beautiful characteristic to have in the face of like this totally oppressive world.
Yeah, it really adds to the film that sort of focus on the future. It takes place in the future, and there's an emphasis on the future.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, to you both, I would love to hear your thoughts on the idea of erasure. I know this is such a key theme within this film. Like, it's essential. We see it in the schools and the terrors. Terror, it may be the right word, actually. I feel like I said it incorrectly, but I think that's the right word here. The terror of losing culture. I was wondering, what do you think it means to own and celebrate culture, and is it really genuinely possible in a world of systemic oppression?
I think Indigenous communities have proved that it is possible. And, you know, the film was like a declaration to say, we have always been here, we are still here, and we will always be here. I mean, I think Indigenous communities have proved that it's possible.
I was wondering to you both why you think, I mean, this is such a key topic in conversation going on right now. Like, this is a film that was written several years ago or in process for several years, but in terms of timing, like, this is right in the center of a national conversation. But I feel like this is a conversation we should have been having for many, many years. Why do you think we're only talking about this at this level now? Why has it taken so long?
I think it goes back to the question you just asked, which is exactly about erasure. You know, this was a project of genocide. Residential schools were in place for seven generations of Indigenous families. It has had a profound impact on all aspects of Indigenous life. But part of it is that it is a project that is meant to erase Indigenous people on our own land. But that hasn't happened. It's been a very difficult summer to bring this all, you know, up again, but it's also something that communities have always known. We have known this. So it's really that the rest of Canada is catching up to the truth. And that acknowledgement of the truth is so important. It is the first step in healing, is just to simply say, we know that this happened, when this history and experience that is present right now. It's not just about the past when we say we know this happened. And I think we are very much still in the truth process of truth and reconciliation. And I think people in the media, especially, just like, you know, leapt onto the word reconciliation when, you know, we had only just begun the process of grappling with the truth.
Well, it's a remarkable project that's incredibly profound. I mean that. So my question to you both is, what do you think hope looks like moving forward in this world and in our own?
Do you want to take that one, Maya?
Oh, man. I think hope looks like love. It looks like community. It sounds like language. Hope is in our youth. Hope is in the connection that we have to elders. Hope is in our stories. Hope is in everything that we are as Indigenous peoples. And so, yeah, I think that we have to have hope. And we've been through so much, and hope and love is what's gotten us through all of that. And so we have to have hope, and we have to have love, and we have to celebrate who we are.
I agree. I think, you know, hope is a powerful thing, but we cannot give hope unless we're willing to take action. You know, to me, hope is interconnected to action. And we give hope to the youth that inspire us when they see us taking action. And for so long, Indigenous communities have known what happened. And they, you know, the Indigenous or the residential school system got shut down because of Indigenous resistance. But I think we're in a moment now where it's really important that we say loudly and publicly that we need more than just Indigenous communities to get on board with taking action for Indigenous justice if we are actually to have a better future. So if we're willing to look at this truth and then just say we want to do something different, to me, that's what gives hope.
Well, I appreciate that. And I genuinely appreciate the chance to speak with you both. It's my hope that this film goes beyond conversation as well, that it leads to action and it leads to further change on a cultural level and on a national and global, I guess, global level as well, because this is not just a Canadian film, Canadian, New Zealand, and resonates so deeply. So thank you. Thank you so much for the chance to chat with you. And I wish you the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Thanks.